This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Fake the Nation, episode 277!
Hello, hello. This is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about culture, and where we hop on our private jets to the Glasgow Climate Summit. I'm your host, Nagin Farsad, and I'm happy to report that I voted today in the NYC mayoral elections, which is a little bit of a virtue signaling brag that I participate in democracy. But it also means we're taping a little earlier than normal on a Tuesday afternoon, so keep that in mind. Today, we're going to talk about where we are in the Glasgow Summit and on climate change in general, and we're all pre-stressed out about that conversation. But don't worry, we're going to keep it light. We'll also talk about the ever-evolving use of language with words like POC or BIPOC or Latinx or just the bevy of words. And finally, we'll stick our hands in the culture grab bag to see what does Let's Go Brandon mean and whether or not you would order from an app that sells restaurant leftovers. I am so excited by today's panel. So joining us, actually, Pete, have you been on this show before? I've just been on many radio things with you.
I've been on your show 14 times.
So you've been on the show 14 made-up times.
Yes.
And
no, at least, I think twice, but it's been several years.
Over years. Okay. Yeah. So,
and
but
I'm excited
also,
to be
I've seen this man do stand-up, and he's absolutely hilarious. I've seen him do totally kill on like shows like Bill Maher, the what is that show that he does on HBO? I'm making it
real
sound
time.
Like it's
that's right, real time.
Yeah. I've just seen this man just be so fantastic as a comedian and commentator. He has a daily podcast called Stand Up with Pete Dominic that you should absolutely subscribe to. It is the one and only Pete Dominic. Hey, Pete.
Yay, so happy to be back, Nagin. Thank you.
Oh my God, so happy to have you back. It's like it's your 14th appearance, going on your third. This week, I am also joined by, for the very first time, and oh my God, I'm so excited because I've been listening to his podcast and I love it so much. He's a senior producer at Pineapple Street Studios. He's also co-host of the wonderful podcast, The Back Issue, which you should also immediately subscribe to because I've been listening to episodes and been having such a good time. Folks, it's Josh Gwynn. Hey, Josh.
Hey. How you doing?
I'm so good. And before we get into the show, I just want to remind people that this week on Patreon, you can hear me, Ophira Eisberg, and Andrew Heaton talk about the future of work. Is the future of work about working less or not at all? What is it about? Plus, we have a crazy tangent about inconsistent morals that was really fun. So check out the bonus episode, and you can support Fake the Nation for as little as $1 a month on our Patreon, and for as little as $4, you know, which is the cost of a cheddar biscuit from one of the bakeries around the corner from me, which is maybe an overpriced cheddar biscuit. I'll just go ahead and say that as well. For the price of that cheddar biscuit, you can get bonus content, bonus episodes of the show. So we have a lot of ways you can support. Go to patreon.com/Nagin Farsad. All right, let's get into it with topic number one. So delegates from around the world are meeting for the 26th time in Glasgow for 26 times. They've done it all over the world. For the 26th time, they're meeting about climate change. Interestingly, I didn't realize that they had met so many times. It actually started in 1992 when then George Bush Sr., easily adopted the commitment of the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, but it turned out that those commitments were super vague and didn't have actually like any earmarks like on emissions or whatever. So it was just kind of like committing to nothing much, but we committed. And then there was a bunch of other you know, there's the Kyoto Protocol, you know, obviously the Paris Climate Accord. So many accords have happened. So many meetings have happened. We're doing it again. Pete, where does it feel like we are with these international folks gathering and talking?
It feels like we are way behind, Nagin. I've been covering this issue both kind of as a journalist, as a comedian, and as an activist. This is an issue that I care deeply about because my kids tell me they want to have kids.
Ooh, that's interesting.
Yeah. You know what?
Imagine
why don't
that.
I kick it back to you and you tell me what to say to them?
No, I mean, it's so funny because I think about, I started using my kid as an excuse for people to care, like a lot in conversation in since she's been alive. And I realized though, I didn't need to have a kid to understand climate change. Like, children exist. Like, just the fact that children exist, they don't have to be yours.
That actually, I disagree. It matters whether or not you care about other people's kids.
Oh, okay, right. I mean, in general, I'm into all kids surviving.
Okay.
Pro kids.
Yeah. I'm into like I don't love kids, but I want all of them to survive.
Like, for example, it's like this. I'm not a racist or a sexist. I like some women and some people of color. It's the same thing with some kids. Like, I like my own kids. I like the ones that I know. Like, I like some other kids.
Right.
But isn't that really, inherently is the problem not only with our society, certainly in America, but with the world when it comes to climate. I mean, this is such an important issue because we are all dealing with it. And of course, the people who are committing the problem, who are mostly responsible for the issue, aren't suffering the worst. So it's the wealthy countries, the countries that are burning the most stuff, most consumption, most emissions, and it's the more underdeveloped countries, poorer nations, that are suffering the biggest habitat loss, the biggest, you know, sea rise in some of these smaller island countries, especially. And so we are responsible, really, just several few countries are mostly responsible, and we have to do a lot better. But like you said, it's non-binding. Listen, as long as there's money in the ground to pull out, there are going to be titans who are going to want to do it. And so the world has to band together against the fossil fuel industry, and that's what we're trying to do.
You know, so we read a couple of pieces about this to prepare for this. One of the pieces we read was by Justin Gillis in the New York Times, this little publication, maybe you've heard of it. And he wrote, "Leaders go to these conferences and make pledges because they are embarrassed not to." And right. So I'm wondering, Josh, like, how much do you think embarrassment is like a factor in international relations?
Not as much as it should be. if it were as successful as I think this writer says that it is, we would have had a little bit more movement on it. I just feel like with this issue, like, it's really hard for me to feel anything optimistic about it, because I feel like we're in the middle of a pandemic. People can't afford childcare. People can't afford housing. And these are like really tangible things that people are faced with. And that's not to say that like climate change isn't tangible, but like as Pete said, it's tangible to those without power right now, as it gets worse and worse and that sort of thing. And so like I feel like I just feel like it's really hard for me to imagine things are going to change given the political system as it's set up right now. Like, I'm supposed to think that like Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema are going to go into the Congress and like want to do something on climate change.
Right,
like,
right.
I don't believe that.
Yeah, Josh. Yeah, I mean, he highlights the issue is money, and Joe Manchin is directly profiting from coal, which is one of the dirtiest fuel. But the answer is also money. And so what is actually working is, and has been for a few years underway, is this divestment movement. And if people don't know about it, 350.org, Bill McKibben and Greta Thunberg is a huge act. Divesting.
By the way, I really love how you put some stank on Thunberg.
Thank
right
you
there.
For noticing. Would you like to hear it again?
Yeah, let's hear it.
I need complete silence. Here we go. Thunberg.
I feel like I just got punched in the face by Sweden when you said that. Okay. So what is this divestment program?
So that's about major endowments, investments like portfolios, like of universities and of pension funds, taking out all of their investments from fossil fuel industry. So if, you know, a teacher's union has a portfolio of investments for their retirement pension, they no longer are supporting the fossil fuel companies within that. This actually worked. It was effective in the apartheid movement against, you know, yes, in South Africa. Even though Ronald Reagan was pissed about it, it worked. And so that's kind of a good point. Like, even if world leaders are somehow bought into it ideologically or, you know, financially, doesn't matter, because we are divesting. So divest your own personal portfolio if you have any money extra that you're investing. And more importantly, support, you know, or don't support organizations. Harvard University just announced their divestment from fossil fuels. Stanford had done it last year. So big, rich universities, organizations, and so on. That's
working.
And I
feel like I did. Is it just me, or was there like the Rockefeller Foundation or something?
Yes, that's right.
Like, would engage with it? So people that have dealt with money, that have made money, have also gone into divestment. And I think what's hopeful about that, Josh, just to bring up your spirits a little bit, because you were a little down. Just to bring up your spirits a little bit, I think the great thing about this divestment movement is that we don't need to wait for countries. This is happening on the level of organizations where you might be a student at a college and you can start the divestment movement there, right? And so that's awesome. And here's another thing I'm going to say that's a little bit hopeful, is that Norway right now is at the point where 60% of new cars sold are electric. California right now is at the point where any new house that's built has to have solar panels. I'm from California. Every time I go back to California, I see more and more solar panels dotting the landscape, right? And so these are things that are happening at a local level. And I mean, Norway is like smaller than California, so very local, right? And they're really happening. And also, when something like that is happening in California or, you know, in New York or whatever, it becomes a bellwether. It becomes an example. Other countries, states want to follow. Other countries want to follow. And so I think we want, obviously, governments to do shit, but it's not all about huge governments doing shit and making us frustrated.
Yeah, but they have to lead and people have to pressure them. I think Josh seems really listless over this. Your listeners should know that he actually was burning a pile of charcoal the whole time they gave this. He really doesn't seem to be that. He's really so pessimistic. In fact, he killed four head of cattle and drank a methane
this morning.
On the Zoom, he was holding it right in front of us. Can I tell you, let's end on this question, because this is something that comes up a lot and I get frustrated about it. And I wonder what your take is. Again, governments have to do their fucking job, and they're in Glasgow and they better fucking do their job. Side note, China and Russia are no-shows, so that's not fun. But India has promised net zero by 2070. So, hey, you know what I mean? We're doing some things. We're making some movements. Let's talk a little bit about personal responsibility. This is such a... I feel like every time I mention it, people immediately, like, rain down on me. Like, you idiot. It's not about personal responsibility. It's about what big governmental organizations can do. Is there some personal responsibility? Like, where are we on the "are you guys using cloth napkin" scale?
Well, I gotta just start, because I've been a militant on this the last 20 years since I bought a home. I was the first home in my neighborhood to have solar panels, first home owner to have an electric car. I make my daughters bring plastic bags back into stores. I pressure cashiers not to give plastic bags out. It's never worked. They find me appalling and deeply offensive. But I the only thing I really don't do is I'm certainly not, you know, personally is not eat meat. I've cut way down on eating animals, but that's a huge, huge thing. But I have a garden. I have everything is about sustainability in my house and has been for a long time. I give talks on this. This is a huge, massively important issue for me. In the end, it's really more psychological than anything else. It makes me feel good that I'm role modeling this behavior. My daughters know, you know, have seen me plug in my car since they were little. They see the solar panels. They know that the energy that we produce is mostly clean. And so it's kind of a like lead by example for my neighborhood, for my kids, but in terms and support it in every way I can. But I'm crazy, Nagin, Josh. I'm nuts about it. Like, I'm annoying about
it. I love that. Josh, where are you? And what? How good do you want to get?
I feel like, I want to get as good as I can. Like, it's a really important issue to me. And it's something that I think about a lot. And I think that, like, the pessimism I feel around, like, bigger institutions, like, I usually rely... In light of that pessimism, I think like my mind is like, okay, what can we do to make things better, like ourselves? Like how can we reduce harm, like personally in our communities and that sort of thing? That just, if I'm being honest, feels like an abysmally short answer to the power that these huge organizations have. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. When I stack them side by side, it's really difficult for me to think of them as being equal.
Yeah,
being
no,
said, I think it's really important to, like, you know, take the steps that you can personally and like in your community to become as sustainable as possible.
You know, exactly. That's, I mean, that's a very nice way of saying, Nagin, it should be major organizations. you're totally right, but I also like, get very frustrated. Right. Exactly. It doesn't mean the other part isn't important. And that's so, and thank you for saying that. But because I get really frustrated with friends that are just like out there, like, I'm going to go to a march in Greta Thunberg and I'm going to say your name with some Swedish tank on it. But they don't engage in any of the personal acts that I think of as living in
the world that you live in. Exactly.
You know, environmentally friendly behavior. And it reminds me of, and I'm always reminded of that one Onion headline that was like, how bad for the environment can throwing away one plastic bottle be? 30 million people wonder, right? And that's literally what's happening. So if you listen to the show, I always talk about this.
Absolutely.
But anyway, stop driving, stop
Absolutely.
Shopping online, stop using plastic, stop. When you can't be reasonable, and it could be reasonable. It doesn't have, you don't have to be like a lunatic about it.
Buy used clothes.
Buy used clothes, yeah.
It's a big one. I'm really excited. Both my girls love thrifting, and it's a super sustainable thing. So, since I don't go anywhere anymore, I don't even need to buy clothes. So,
okay. All right, folks, let me know where you're at with this. Are you feeling a little hopeful? I hope you're feeling a little hopeful. I do want to leave this segment with people feeling a little hopeful. We're going to take a quick break to learn about our wonderful sponsors that keep the lights on here at Fake the Nation. And when we come back, we'll just continue talking. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Folks, I feel like I've mentioned this before, but I tried other services that I was displeased with. And then a neighbor of mine was trying Factor. I had pulled them aside in the hallway and I was like, what are you feeling about this Factor? And they were like, it is delicious. You should definitely do it. So then me and my husband did it and we loved it. They are chef-prepared meals that arrive to your door, and then in 2 minutes, you could be eating them. Like, it's so simple, and they're actually delicious. And for people like me who just sometimes, my schedule can be so maniacal between traveling in different cities and, you know, doing stand-up gigs. It's like I just don't have a typical schedule where I can plan, set aside time for cooking and all that stuff. So something like Factor really helps for me. The other thing that I love to do is try not to eat carbs. So they have a keto option, which is fantastic. It's super delicious. They use premium ingredients. You can get stuff with like filet mignon and shrimp and truffle butter and broccolini and asparagus, right? Like real ingredients. They're no fuss, no mess meals. They eliminate the hassle of having to prep. They're tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with flexibility. You can pause or reschedule. I've actually done that. I've both paused and rescheduled. Factor is basically your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. We're celebrating Earth Day all month long, and look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should head to factormeals.com/fakethenation50 and use the code fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code fakethenation50 at factormeals.com/fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And we are back and we're ready for topic number two. So we read a piece in the New York Times called BIPOC or POC, Equity or Equality, The Debate Over Language on the Left by Amy Harmon. It's a sort of roundup of where we are on language. But beyond reading that piece, we've actually been living in America and we've been witnessing the ginned up culture wars. So language is on everyone's mind and in everyone's mouth. Harmon's main claim is that for those pushing for changes in society on race and other issues, words matter, but they can also muddle, right? So I'm just wondering from both of you, where are we? Are these words mattering or muddling? Where are you on the spectrum, Josh?
I feel like both. Like words are power, right? Like, so it depends on how you're using them. The thing that really bothers me about this debate, I think, is that it usually gets framed as like, these progressives on the left, BIPOC, implicit bias, these new words. And it's like we watched the word woke turn from something that was like empowering and specific into like an epithet. Like we're watching critical mm-hmm. race theory get redefined in real time in a way that feels very top down to me. So then the debate becomes for me personally, it's like, okay, people are using language in order to advance political causes, but what is the intent in those causes? Are you trying to include people? Or are you trying to exclude people? Are you trying to get to a closer to a truth, whether it's a personal truth or like a historical truth, or are you trying to cover it up? And those feel like two different political projects that get like really flattened in this the way that people compare the way that language is used on the left and the right, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I just want to point out a couple of these terms to kind of make this a little bit more concrete for listeners. So, for example, Latinx is meant to be a more inclusive and gendered way of referring to what we used to say Latino, or what a lot of people still say Latino again. And I don't, you know, like I don't know. And I have a lot of Latino friends, or I have a lot of Latinx friends who say Latino and still don't say Latinx. I mean, you know, this is the thing I think that becomes part of the debate is like, when did these words happen and are we definitely supposed to use them or does it matter? Like, for example, BIPOC. Like, BIPOC was one that snuck up on me.
And me too.
It's interesting because a lot of these words, like equity instead of equality, and stuff like were a part of
I went to grad school for African American studies. Who didn't? Okay. And that some of these words were just in there from grad school, and they did not enter the mainstream when I was in grad school.
Right.
They were just like grad school speak. They were in the in our, you know, academic texts, and those are just, they're all the words that we used. And I remember when I felt like a lot of those words started coming into a lot of this mainstream dialogue, I was just totally shocked. But BIPOC, for example, was one that wasn't around when I was in grad school. And that's supposed to be Black Indigenous people of color. So emphasize that Black and Indigenous people have experienced a different type of injustice than just your, I guess, other people of color. I might have that wrong.
No,
but
yeah.
Even so,
Black
the word
comma
came,
people of color.
people of color. Right. And the word is now even in Merriam-Webster. But a number of linguists said that they don't even know where it came from. Like, they can't find the origin of it. So then you're sort of like, who do I ask? Who made it? What's happening?
Well,
you know,
think,
and so do Pete, where do you think we are?
I think the answer to who do you ask is obviously, hello, a white. As a white, we decide in the end.
Uh-huh.
Because
yeah.
There aren't any words that can hurt us. I think that I actually do have a lot to say about this, but I think just a couple jokes. Like, my dad, like, I think it's interesting to talk to an older person, but especially an older white person who if they're trying to do right, even a little, they're at least listening about what words. You know, I remember correcting my dad on Oriental, and what he said to me was like, listen, I'll call anybody, whatever they want to call. Just send me the memo. And as long as I get to, I can always use asshole, because he wants to be able to call everybody and anybody an asshole. And I was like, yeah, that has nothing to do with gender or anything. Anybody, everybody has. But the point was, like, he wants to try to say the right thing. But the discussion we're having here is, what is the right thing? Even amongst Indigenous people themselves, even amongst trans people, what is language and so on? So it's like, I would say, I think that words matter. As a comedian also, I think words matter a lot. And I did some work for a while in domestic abuse issues. And that's where I learned the most about this, which was, it starts with verbal abuse. And if you can dehumanize a person, then you can physically abuse a person. And so as much as you want to sit there and say words shouldn't matter and free speech and so on, they do matter. They do tremendous, tremendous damage. And I think the question is, hey, it's just hard to keep up with what, you know, out of respect, people might want to be referred to, and, you know, Latinx or Latino or Hispanic, white people why can't we just call everybody Mexicans? Apparently there are people from Peru and Spain and Cuba. Why can't we just all call you, like, that's what, why can't you understand what the whites need?
Oh, I mean, okay. And it's, it's interesting because one thing that I find weird is that people get real. So I'm Iranian, and you know, Josh, you're Black.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't mean to out you.
Mm-hmm. Every
but
day,
I just noticed. and do you? I guess my main concern is that sometimes some of the terms get so, I guess my, oh no, let me clean up how I'm saying this. I don't even know what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, how upset do you get when people use, I don't know, POC instead of BIPOC, or I don't know.
I mean,
where do you land on the upset?
Black, African American, like what?
Yeah,
like, it's like.
Yeah.
I think that, like, I mean, I don't get upset. I feel like, I mean, okay, so let's take the acronym BIPOC.
Yeah.
I understand the intent. Like, I understand singling out the Black experience and the Indigenous experience in order to, like, signal it as different. But there's BIPOC. I always just say Black American, like that's how I identify. But
yeah,
like because the idea of BIPOC or people of color, and I've never really verbalized this, but it's like the thing that makes me uncomfortable about it is that they both default whiteness in a way that makes me uncomfortable. Like, we don't go around calling people like people of non-color, like like, you know what I mean?
Right.
And that's so interesting. And so I think that there's something aspirational about the word. Like, there's like a like in the word, it feels like there's a hope for coalition building. There's hope for like solidarity between different communities. I don't know whether that's been realized yet, or like whether that's like something that actually exists. I have no problem calling myself Black American or calling someone whatever they identify as. And I think that this is kind of just like one of those other debates where it's like everyone just assumes that people that are interested in these words or that use these words are just hypersensitive. And it really kind of is annoying to me. I just don't understand what's so bad about trying to be better with your language once you know better.
Also, I think the debate assumes that people are really that they're really sensitive when I actually am generally confronted with people who are not that sensitive about it.
Right.
They're just like, yeah, whatever. You could say Latinx to me or you could say Latino.
Like, if I said the word microaggressions to my parents, they would be like, what is that? Like, I was worried about aggressions, you know? Like, right. I wouldn't say that's like the mark of someone who is sensitive. I think that like, I just think it's one of these debates that's kind of like, you back people into corners into being hypersensitive over words that like are really just attempts at making spaces more inclusive for more people. And that's not something that's like ends tomorrow. That's something that's going to continue the more and more that we live. Right.
But can I just say what Josh just said about microaggressions? Like, I just want to be clear with how I hear that. Like, I understand what Josh meant by it. But I feel like microaggressions, I think anybody can deal with those. I have those with my wife. She certainly has them with me. But it's more like, I feel like it's an important word to describe the way that someone is treating you, making you feel, even if it's nonverbal, you feel that someone is being a certain way to you because you are Black, female.
Absolutely. I think, and they're absolutely true. They're absolutely exist.
Like,
they're things that people, and that's why I think those words matter. What I'm just saying is just that language isn't something that we're going to arrive at. It's a journey, and it's not something that's going to be completed. And so, like, we're going to continue to try on these words and try on these different ways of explaining things in order to make people feel more included. And if that, I don't understand what's bad about that.
Right. It's asymptotic. We'll never reach we'll just approach it, but there's infinite, it kind of goes on into infinity.
Yeah. Speaking of words, what the hell was that?
the asymptote in geometry. I'm sorry. Did you guys not take calculus? Oh, that's weird. No, wait. But Pete, I do have a question for you, which is that basically, One thing that I saw was a poll that found that, for example, more than twice as many white Democrats say they felt very favorably toward the word BIPOC as Americans who identify as any of the non-white racial categories it encompasses. So weirdly, it is white people that, according to this one poll, are driving the use of some of these words, which I think hilarious.
I think it is hilarious, but it's also, I think, a well-meaning thing. It's white folks wanting to be an ally, wanting to do the right thing, and not realizing that while language is super important, actions often speak louder than anything else. And so I want to call you whatever you want to be called. And if that's the new word, we're going to use it and we're going to say it. But the idea that I would ever get into an argument with someone that, you know, identifies as a, is a weird thing. Like, where I'm calling, you're going to be called African-American. Now, I'd prefer if you call me Black. Listen, I'm trying to keep up.
Right.
I want to, you know, do, like, it's not up to the whites, but at the same time, it is a well-intentioned, hopefully, that we're trying to understand, be an ally, be empathic, and do what is hopefully the right thing. But at the same time, realizing that there's a lot more to it than just words.
And is there a point at which this is something that came up a lot in this piece we read, that all of this language, this focus on language, is actually a distraction from doing any actual work on policy.
Yeah,
I think that a lot of times it's used as like a shield, especially by like white liberals. I feel like last year, like especially me and a lot of my friends, you know, there was like this like overnight thing where everyone was like, oh, racism exists. And then because they had access to this language, they used it as a way to disguise themselves as like, you know, I'm one of the good ones. I understand what you're going through. I'm going to a book club. And like, then nothing changed, you know?
I think a perfect example of to illustrate what Josh is saying is like, I'm one of those white liberals who says for example, like I'm for all kinds of important policies that I think affect people of color more, you know, a lot more, from the drug war to affirmative action. Like I'm for interracial marriage, of course, but I don't want any black people in my neighborhood. I'm for Joe Biden, but not for my daughter dating a black man.
Right.
And I think that therein lies the difference between like saying you're not a racist, right, and oh, I don't have a racist bone in my body, and being what I think we should do is be an anti-racist, which anti-racism is more about actually doing things. and doing everything you can to use your network, to mentor, to create opportunities, to open doors, to advocate for, to, I think what Josh touched on too, you mean, is really what Dr. Martin Luther King said about, you know, I'm paraphrasing, of course, because I can never quote the guy or anybody, but the real danger is the moderate liberal, not the Klan member. It's the person who doesn't speak up at the Board of Education meeting, much less go when we're talking, you know, these crazy people in my town. And so I think that being an anti-racist is to be on the side of right and on the side of justice, not to just say, oh, I support this or that. You actually have to actively do things for your community and for your network to help, you know, create opportunities.
By the way, I want to point out that Pete Dominic not only does an excellent Swedish accent, he does an excellent moderate liberal accent. Because you had us going for a second there. folks, let me know where you stand. I did want to say before I tell people to let me know where they stand, is one of the things that I feel like is that I see a lot with the kind of like moderate liberal that you're talking about is like land use recognitions. You know, I don't know if you've been to events where they do land use recognition or whatever. And it's like, okay, that's cool. But I'm not sure. It almost feels like, okay, we can say this thing where that this land used to belong to this particular tribe or whatever. And we're just, you know, and now we're using it. And then it kind of like means we don't have to do any meaningful work after that. Like it does do, right. It does give you that feeling. Or like, you know, you can't criticize this group. They did a land use acknowledgement, acknowledgement, I think is what they're called. Sorry.
I feel like that's a absolutely true, but a more obscure example. And the better example is the most obvious example that happens all over. And it's schools. We're so anti-racist and we're so for opportunity. But when it comes to schools, we realize the lack of balance and the inequities that lie in education because it's attached to property value. And yet we don't do anything about that to create, you know, or not to mention, we're not like the idea that we're not all for universal pre-K, which would be a game changer for anybody living in the lower end of the income scale, which obviously disproportionately affects black and brown folks in this country. So there's so many policies that you really could be advocating for in your own community. They might even cost you a little bit more money in your taxes, which would be awesome for everybody.
You know, the other thing I want to also, I really wish we would do more marketing towards rich people about how things would be more awesome for them if they spent a little bit money on more taxes. Like, are you tired of wildfires inching up on your backyard? Spend a little money on taxes.
Let's lock them all into a timeshare.
And we can deal with climate change.
A timeshare presentation where they have to learn about like like gerrymandering and school redistricting. Yeah.
Totally.
Well, they know about gerrymandering in school.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're the ones they're advocating. They're the ones drawing the districts. Exactly. Unfortunately, you know, to lock in the politicians who are going to give them the tax policies, especially that they need. But I there's so much that can be done and that needs to be done. And I just love that Josh made that point, because it really is on the white liberal, or, you know, I should find that MLK quote about the moderate, if you will.
Folks, let me know where you think we are on the language thing. Are you sensitive about it, or do you think, like, is it just not something that upsets you or enters into your frame of mind? So let me know on all the social media that none of us should be on. Let us move on to topic number 3. Let's dip into the cultural grab bag. I have a few items here I want to go over with you both. Do you know what the phrase "Let's go, Brandon" means?
Yes, unfortunately. It's a thing that,
okay, Josh, can you tell the listeners? Because I didn't know until I just saw it in a piece, and I was like, what?
My understanding was that it was like a NASCAR. It originated with like the NASCAR community.
Yeah, and, like a NASCAR rally.
And someone won, and there were people talking behind them, and they couldn't make out what they were saying, and they thought they were saying, "Let's go, Brandon," but they were actually saying, "Fuck Joe Biden."
Right. There was like a whole thing of chanting, right. and they thought it was "Let's go, Brandon," but it turns out they were actually chanting "fuck
now
Joe Biden."
It's a secret and code that people use to say "fuck Joe Biden," and a pilot used it on a yep. Southwest flight, which
that's right.
I need to know if he said it at the beginning of the flight or the end.
That's a great question. Actually, I don't know the answer to that. But so Pete, with this Southwest, yep. and that's how I heard about it, is because it yep. got to the point, it's on t-shirts.
Right.
Governor Greg Abbott of Texas used the phrase on Twitter. Yeah. Like,
people are using it all over the place. In Congress. Yep.
Which is so yep. gross. I mean, it's very, I mean, obviously, we said a lot of shitty things about Trump, but Biden is a different type of person. I think even Republicans recognize he's a different type of person. So just being like that gross to him, I think, is gross. Anyway, I don't know what else to say. My question for you is on the Southwest pilot dude. What yeah. do you think should happen? This guy said it. I do think it was at the beginning, if I remember reading that correctly. That he said it at the beginning, that he said, "Let's go, Brandon," which obviously means fuck Joe Biden. So he's sort of announcing his political affiliations at the start yep. of a flight. What is that? It's weird. It's weird. But it's also sort of like starting a flight with like, "I hate quesadillas." Or I mean, it's that's also weird. Like, it's just weird to start a flight that way. So, Pete, what do you think should happen to this pilot? Because this was the controversy that sort of erupted this week.
Well, I mean, I could be convinced of other things, I suppose, but he should be suspended and disciplined and made an example of, so that, you know, the pilot's job is to sit there while the robot flies the plane. I mean, they get a little bit too much glory at this point, I think. but they, you know, and they get on the PA and they think they've got all this power, because they do, because they're the captain of the plane. And I think that if you said something like "screw black people" or "I hate women" or "gay people should be whatever, you know, against a class of people," you're fired. You're done. You don't get right. to work again. But saying "I hate the president" or "F the president" is a little different, I think. And I think this guy should be made an example of. I think he should be able to, you know, keep his job. But I also think it's the only funny thing that Trumpers have come up with in like 8 years. Like, it's kind of funny.
My point is that it doesn't even slap. Like, I remember
when
Trump was president,
the
and
bar is
we
so
had,
low.
We had like YG and Nipsey Hussle come up with like bops, like yeah. "fuck Donald Trump." Like, this is not good.
Yeah.
Go back to the drawing board. It's not like, if you're going to come up with a dog whistle and it's "Let's go, Brandon." Help.
Right,
no, but fair enough. That's a fine and accurate point. And let's be clear. No one came up with it. It's not like,
right.
like you mentioned, actual artists that wrote things
right.
and recorded them.
Yeah.
This was an accident. That was a misunderstanding.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I love that. Yeah. I love that your criticism is like art criticism, right? That you're essentially like a reviewer.
I have a friend that's talk about like whether things are problematic and stuff. It's like, first, can we talk about whether it's good? Like, that's not even memorable.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and you're absolutely right. It feels, and it feels easily like, 3 months from now, you would not even remember what that was.
Exactly.
Because it's so nothing. It feels so nothing.
I also do want to say, I think Brandon is a super white name. Am I right?
Yeah. No,
do we know
right.
any?
Yeah, no.
Any Brandons?
I mean, I don't know. All right. Let us move on to another moment in culture this week. There's an app that lets you buy leftovers from restaurants. It's called Too Good To Go. And it's basically, they have leftovers. Restaurants, cafes, bakers, whatever. And then you kind of click on what time you'd go to their establishment, like near the end of the day, and get whatever leftover thing that they have. And the most popular one, or like basically the one that, you know, is used the most, is like a surprise bag. That's like kind of an option. So for example, if you're going to a bakery, you click on surprise bag. I'm going to pick it up at 5 p.m. You'll just get whatever random scones and shit, you know, that they had left over from that day. And it's a fraction of the cost that would be to get those things full price. What do you think of this app? Would you use it?
Absolutely. I'd use it.
Yeah.
I didn't like in the write-up that it said that the waiters didn't know that they were a part of it. I feel like they should fix that.
yeah.
But like, if I were trying out a new restaurant or one that I've never been to before, like, I'd absolutely get like a surprise prefix box and taste it out and see what was going on. I don't think that there's anything weird about it.
Pete?
Yeah. To our earlier conversation about climate and sustainability, that's the most important answer here, which is, why would we be wasting food?
Exactly.
Why is anybody, especially from a restaurant, like, would I be for it? Like, how is anybody against it? Like, yes, I hate cooking. I hate preparing food. I hate cleaning up. Bring me the food and also all that food, you know, that it comes in containers and so on. So like, the idea that we're throwing out food is a bizarre notion, especially if it was prepared by someone who was, you know, skilled versus me. Like, I understand why people would throw away the leftovers from something I made, but I don't think I qualify.
Okay. I know. I like it too. I mean, it makes total sense. It's actually one of the rare, I mostly hate everything about the internet, except these moments where there is an actual efficiency that is, most of the stuff that the internet does is like, adds, you know, carbon to the air, right? Like, it's like, you know, Uber and Lyft and whatever, or like poor employment practices, no health insurance, and it adds idling cars into that just pollute our skies. You know, all of the services that you can get, all of the online shopping, all of that stuff. Most of the services provided by the internet, I think, are net negative. This, though, seems like an actually decent and efficient way of, like, making sure food goes to good use.
For now.
Well,
my daughter used Uber Eats to get French fries from McDonald's, just one item, lectured her about how that was a ridiculous use of delivery. If you're going to have food delivered, you have to have a meal delivered for at least, you know, a few people.
Yeah.
But one item.
Yeah.
And I had to put a cigarette out on her.
I hope you disowned her.
Yeah. Josh heard it.
No, cigarette on her. That's, there it is. That's reasonable.
Okay. Yes. Sometimes you got to teach him.
Josh has to keep reminding himself that Pete is a comedian.
No, I would never. It was a cigar.
Oh, my God. Okay, here's the last piece of our cultural grab bag is that Merriam-Webster announced a bunch of words that are going into the dictionary in 2021. And I'm just going to get your thoughts on a couple of them. One of these words is, Pete, we'll start with you, because one of the words is, am I right? AMIRITE. And it's a phrase I have used for years. I love it. I think it makes me, you know, it makes me feel good every time I use it. A comedian's expression. What do you think?
I love Am I Right? I don't really use it. I use it in language, but I don't ever type it. I might start typing it, but I am very much for whataboutism. That's one of the words this year, too, in this year's list.
Yeah, yeah.
I like whataboutism.
Yeah, it's a thing that's used. I mean, whataboutism was probably around forever. It's just it didn't have a term.
No, actually, Eve in the Garden of Eden used it against Adam. And I can't finish that joke. Please, somebody help me.
Okay, so another one of these, Josh, is air fryer. have you felt just like an absolute increase in people mentioning air frying?
1,000%. It's like, yes, there's an entire air fryer TikTok. It's and it's great. But I feel like I'm one of these people. I really want to know what the criteria is that they use in order to let these words in, because some of these words, I look at this list and I get exhausted, because it's like a Venn diagram of ideas I never want to hear again. And things that are kind of old, like there's on this list, there's like TBH and FTW, which feel like very old ideas.
Like 2005, right?
Right.
Like they feel very
mixed
old.
In with things like air fryer or like long COVID. And I'm like, how are these on the same list?
It's long so weird. Exactly. What is it about today that they decided that it's time for TBH to go in? But also, some of these words, I hate hearing them. Like, I don't love TBH, and those things feel so internet-y and just like hack. Like, I don't like. And it's also meaningless. Like, to be honest, like, are you all never honest? And then right now you're honest. It's like, it just feels like a totally needless, you know what I mean? So some of these.
To be honest, there is one here that triggers me in this year's list.
Yes, let's hear it.
It is dad bod. Oh.
Did you feel personally attacked by it?
Well, let me use it in a sentence. I have teenage daughters, and so I'm super proud of the fact that I do not, at age now 46, have a dad bod. Oh, no. I still got it.
Pete, you look great. Pete looks great, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, folks, let me know. Check out this Merriam-Webster dictionary list and let me know what words are really getting you. Folks, that is the end of the show. Thank you so much for joining me. You guys are so fun. This was awesome. And what I would love is for the people of Faith the Nation to be able to follow you and all of the wonderful things you do. Josh, where do they do that?
You can follow me at Regarding Josh on all social media, and you can follow Back Issue on Instagram at Back Issue Podcast.
Yeah, guys, definitely subscribe to Back Issue. I was just, I don't know, leafing through some things and noticed they got a really great write-up in the New York Times. And I immediately started listening and just had such a great time. So definitely, follow Josh and subscribe to the show. Pete Dominic, where do people find you?
Well, Nagin, that's me on social media, Pete Dominic. But I host a daily podcast that welcomes two expert guests every day, and I do like a full news recap that I try to make funny sometimes. And so it's every day. It's Stand Up with Pete Dominic. I do it from my solar-powered shed, and I would love for people to give it a shot.
Oh, my gosh. And I've had the just extreme luck over these many years of doing a lot of shows with Pete, and he's brilliant and funny. It's a really remarkable combination. So absolutely subscribe to that show.
Oh, I should say Arab American Comedy Fest this week, too.
Oh, yeah. There you go. Arab American Comedy Festival. Support. And folks, you know where to find me. I just guest hosted Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me in for Peter Sagal last week. So if you haven't listened to that show, check it out. It was super fun. I have a new piece out in the Progressive magazine, my column Hemming and Hawing. And this week it's about home ownership. And it is a fun one, maybe, or a thoughtful one. I don't know. You decide. I'm not going to tell you. And you can catch me in the Adult Swim Fest November 12th and 13th. And we're also even going to be, I'm going to be doing stand-up at the Adult Swim Fest. It's a digital festival, so everyone can go. And I'm also going to be doing like a viewing of Bird Girl. So check that out. If you haven't seen Bird Girl, it'll be fun to do it with members of the cast. And folks, what I would really like to do is thank all of the wonderful people that make this show a possibility. That is our just brilliant producer, Danielle Jones-Wesley, our fantastic sound engineer, Stephanie Aguilar. HeadGum is full of wonderful people that make this show a reality. Our theme music was written by Gabby Alter. And as always, rate and review us on Apple Podcasts because it really helps people find the show. You can email us at fakethenation@headgum.com. Join the Patreon at patreon.com/NagineFarsad for bonus content and so much more. And we will be back in your earballs next week.
That was a HeadGum podcast.